Comprehensive, relevant, and insightful conversations about health and medicine happen here on MedStar Health Doc Talk. There are 8 major glands in the human body that secrete microscopic levels of hormones which regulate very important bodily functions. One of those glands is the thyroid. But what happens when the little butterfly-shaped organ that wraps around the windpipe develops cancer? Dr. Vinay Gupta, Director of Surgical Oncology at MedStar Franklin Square Medical Center in Baltimore, is here to answer that question and more about thyroid cancer on this episode of MedStar Health Doc Talk. I'm your host, Deborah Schindler. Thanks for being here, Dr. Gupta.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the invitation to speak about this topic.
Well, as I mentioned to you, I had always thought that if I had to choose a cancer, it would be thyroid cancer. But maybe I was a little disillusioned about how innocuous it is.
Yeah, it's interesting how thyroid cancers in general are not as aggressive as other cancers. So we're definitely hopeful, you know, that most of our patients do extremely well with this type of disease. But nobody wants cancer. You're exactly right.
The American Cancer Society estimates that about 44,000 Americans will be diagnosed with thyroid cancer this year. Putting that into perspective, 264,000 people will get a breast cancer diagnosis. Does that make thyroid cancer rare?
You know, it's interesting. It's kind of more of an uncommon cancer. So thyroid nodules are very common for patients to have. However, only about 5% of these are actually malignant. And so thyroid cancers in general represent roughly about 45,000 patients each year. And that puts us in the uncommon category.
Okay. The surprising part to me was how dramatically divided those statistics are. 12,000 men versus 31,000 women are estimated to get a thyroid cancer diagnosis this year, which means being a woman is already a risk factor.
You're exactly right. Thyroid cancer is definitely much more common in women compared to men. And it's actually the number 7 leading cancer in women.
What other risk factors might there be for thyroid cancer diagnosis?
So we find thyroid cancer more in our Caucasian population than our African American population. And then there is a segment of our Asian population that's also been affected, especially those who have emigrated from Japan and other areas in Southeast Asia, primarily due to their history of unfortunate exposure to radiation. So there are different kinds of thyroid cancer. There are the differentiated type of thyroid cancers, and this includes our papillary thyroid cancer, follicular, and Hürthle cell cancers. These cancers have a great prognosis. So when we think of cancer in general, we're usually thinking 5-year prognosis as to how patients are going to do. For this type of cancer, we're talking 10-year prognosis. So we expect you to be around a long time with this. This is over a 95% 10-year survival rate for these type of cancers. Then we talk about medullary thyroid cancer. This is one that's most associated with a strong family history for these type of cancers. And it's usually associated with other, what we call endocrinopathies. That means other endocrine glands are also involved with this type of cancer. So patients can have an overactive parathyroid gland. They could have an adrenal mass. They could have other signs and symptoms of other problems. And other cancers that can put them in this what's called multiple endocrine neoplasia syndrome. That's a whole other class of pathology to talk about. And then the last type is that anaplastic type that unfortunately patients don't do well. It's unfortunately a uniformly fatal problem where the thyroid cancer just absolutely goes crazy and becomes super, super aggressive to where it essentially just forms a firm mass right there on top of the windpipe and unfortunately grows into the windpipe and causes severe problems.
The goal in treating cancer, of course, is early detection. What are the symptoms of early stage thyroid cancer?
So most patients will show up with a lump in their neck, either one that they've actually felt while bathing or applying lotion or something totally innocuous. Other times it's the primary care doctor that's examining them on their routine physical exam, and they'll feel a lump. This then usually promotes some sort of evaluation with an ultrasound, and then they'll come and see us that, hey, there's a nodule here in the thyroid that's not supposed to be there, and it looks a little abnormal on the ultrasound. Most patients are what we call clinically euthyroid, meaning that they're not hyperthyroid or hypothyroid. Hyperthyroid are those patients who are always fidgety, always nervous, always have to do something. They have sweats for no reason. Their hands shake and tremorous. They lose weight very easily. And hypothyroid are those patients who always feel cold and are always kind of lethargic and tired. We're all tired to some extent, but these patients are more tired than the average person should be. And they tend to gain weight very quickly. Sounds a lot like me, but these patients have an underactive thyroid. So some have underactive, some have an overactive thyroid. But in general, most patients will show up with having some form of a lump in their neck. So a lot of times patients won't even notice it because it grows so slowly. And so what happens is that there may be a family member that may say, hey, what's that lump in your neck or what's that? And then it gets confirmed by the primary care doctor and then evaluated after that.
Describe the other symptoms. I have read that there is pain in your neck or throat. And I have that now. Do I have any lumps showing?
So usually not. So usually these are painless nodules and they tend to move as we swallow. So we get a sensation of a lump. And then especially when we swallow, we feel a kind of a globus sensation. So a sense of a lump in the back of our throat when we swallow.
Oh, interesting. And have you ever had a patient come in who had a hoarseness in their voice from it?
So very rare. So these are patients who have more advanced disease. So these are patients who have a firm nodule. It's very hard. It seems to be stuck to other structures there in the neck. It doesn't move very easily as they swallow. And unfortunately, it usually in that situation is growing into the nerves that go to the voice box. And so those would be those concerning masses for what's called anaplastic thyroid cancer. So it would be a very fatal disease.
The more severe.
Absolutely.
So some of these symptoms just seem like they would be very easy to dismiss for busy people who just think maybe it's a cold-related symptom what happens if they don't get it treated? How long would it go before it was too late to do anything about it?
Thankfully, the biology of thyroid cancer, just as you suggested early on, is excellent, meaning that it's not one that's going to grow and explode like other cancers do in time. For most people, thyroid cancers stay well contained and are usually able to be identified before they tend to spread to other areas. When we think of what happens if we don't find it today versus finding it tomorrow, for this particular type of cancer, it's okay. And that's why that patients who are patients can have a lump for many years and it not be really truly investigated until the patient has been evaluated by their primary care doctor.
Let's walk through the process. They feel a lump. They sense any of these symptoms. The patient detects something is wrong or the primary care physician finds something with a physical exam. Do they then go to an ENT to get it checked out? How is it officially diagnosed?
So usually the course for the patient is that either they feel the lump or their primary care doctor feels a lump, and then they'll go for an ultrasound. The ultrasound will identify that lump and maybe other nodules in the thyroid as well. From that, we get a sense of the size and we get a sense of the characteristics of this nodule. Are there irregular borders? Are there calcifications within the nodule? Is there central hypervascularity, so main blood flow through the center of this nodule? All these are suggesting a more potentially malignant process.
And all of those characteristics would show up on an ultrasound?
An ultrasound. And so from that ultrasound, we're able to identify which nodules are suspicious and which ones aren't. And based on size and these kind of suspicious characteristics, we then recommend, or it is then recommended for a patient to undergo an ultrasound-guided biopsy. That can happen either with a radiologist or in our office or with an endocrinologist. So usually one of the three of us will be performing an ultrasound-guided biopsy. And what that entails is basically a patient sitting in our examination chair. We use the ultrasound to localize the nodule in question. And then we will usually numb up the skin and we'll insert a needle into that spot. This needle is very, very small. It's smaller than what they use to draw blood. And so we're able to access that nodule and be able to take out some cells. That then gets sent to a pathology lab. where they look at the cells in a couple different formats and are able to then render us an answer, usually in about 5 business days. From that, we're able to identify if it's cancer, not cancer, or something in between. Then depending upon if it's cancer, we're going to be talking about an operation. If it's not cancerous, we look at the characteristics again of the nodule, and then we usually repeat an ultrasound within 6 months. If we're really concerned about the nodule, we may either biopsy it again and also send it for what's called genetic analysis, or we'll even talk about an operation as to remove that little segment to be 100% sure that we're not dealing with the cancer. In those patients where we're kind of in between in terms of the cytology, then again, we look at the characteristics of the lesion in relationship to the ultrasound and then the patient's overall risk for cancer. If the risk is high, then we would either, again, repeat the ultrasound-guided biopsy or send for genetics or even talk about an operation. Once we know that there is cancer there, then we definitely want to talk about an operation, and that usually means removing the whole thyroid. So not usually just that little segment, but usually the whole thyroid.
So removing the thyroid seems it result in some problems down the road. And there was a journal report I want to preface. A recent publishing in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association, reported that 2/3 of thyroid cancer survivors felt that they were not informed of important information before they underwent treatment. I'm guessing that means regarding the removal of their thyroid, because there would be changes if that thyroid wasn't there, secreting those hormones that we talked about in the very beginning, right? 67% wished that they had been informed of life changes without a thyroid. I would like to know what kind of changes do happen once that thyroid comes out. You would probably have to have a conversation with the patient, right? Or is that totally left up to the primary care?
No, we would have that conversation with the patient. We try to address these issues ahead of time so that the patient knows what to expect. Some things are unexpected, but most things are understood before the surgery. When we think of the thyroid, as you explained, is a butterfly-shaped organ, and it lives right in front of our windpipe. And what it is it's kind of encapsulated by different muscles. And these muscles also help support the windpipe and the voice box. And so what happens is that when we take out our thyroid, we do have to do a lot of dissection in that area. So even if the nerve is completely intact and working properly, we can have some changes in our voice. It may become a little huskier or a little higher than normal. But basically, we don't have that same support around our windpipe that may then affect our muscles or may affect our voice. Some patients notice that this most, especially if they're singers, then it can cause them to not really be able to hit the super high notes that they may be accustomed to. Other people notice a scar. Other people have a sensation, kind of that globus sensation we were talking about, where they feel kind of a lump as they swallow. Those patients who have to undergo radioactive iodine may have some additional problems, and that can include things like a dry mouth, can include some mild problems swallowing because of the dry nature of their throat. They can also identify a reduced taste because, again, the radioactive iodine has a localized radiation effect that can affect their taste buds as well as the sweat glands or the saliva glands in their...
That's a permanent change, or that's something that they experienced like right after the treatment?
I've had some patients have it as a permanent problem. So for most patients, it's a temporary issue, but for some patients, it can be a lifelong problem.
So surgery is the standard treatment. I understand that. But what about this radioactive iodine treatment or thyroid hormone therapy? Is that an option to surgery, or is that in addition to surgery?
So usually that's in addition to surgery. Surgery is still the mainstay for our treatment for thyroid cancer, and that means removing the entire gland of the thyroid. We also usually will remove lymph nodes that are in the middle portion of the neck, right below the thyroid. That's called the central compartment. And by removing these lymph nodes, it gives us the most accurate staging for our thyroid cancer. As long as we don't have lymph node involvement outside or in the outer parts of our neck, then the disease is considered to be well contained. For patients who have disease that's contained just within the thyroid and the thyroid nodule where cancer is small, meaning less than 1.5 inches, then we usually don't need to give radioactive iodine. But in patients whose disease seems to extend a little bit beyond the edges of the thyroid, or there's some involvement of the lymph channels or involvement of lymph nodes or involvement of the blood vessels around the thyroid, they tend to benefit more from the radioactive iodine.
How is that administered, the radioactive iodine?
That's usually an oral form of the radioactive iodine that's administered, and then the patient is given about a month okay. to 2 months after surgery.
Let's talk about the surgery then.
Yeah.
The incision would be right there where the Adam's apple is, I suppose?
For most of us,
How big?
Basically, the incision is roughly about 3 inches long.
And then you have to remove something, or is it right there?
So the incision is basically just over above the, basically it's at the collar of the neck. And basically we were able to move the tissues up and down, and that allows us to see the muscles that protect the thyroid and the windpipe. We split those muscles, and so we're not cutting those muscles. Mm-hmm. And then we are at that point staring right at the thyroid. And once we've done that, then we look for the blood vessels that feed the thyroid, divide those blood vessels, and then we are able to dissect the thyroid out from around the windpipe.
Why couldn't you just remove the nodules and leave the thyroid? Is that a possibility?
So for this disease, it's not a great option. The reason is because, number one, usually, especially in the most common thyroid cancer, papillary cancer, it's a multifocal disease. And so that means it can affect any different part of the thyroid. And so up to 80% of patients will have disease in all parts of the thyroid. So it's important to remove the entire thyroid while you're there. Number two is that the treatment we were just talking about was for radioactive iodine. And so that needs to get concentrated in those cells that are trying to promote or trying to make thyroid hormone. And so we want the minimal amount of thyroid hormone. We want the minimal amount of remaining thyroid so that we have the best effect from our radioactive iodine. The third thing is that the way we follow these patients is with a drug. The way we follow these patients is with a blood test called thyroglobulin. And this test shows us the protein that's made by the thyroid gland or the thyroid cells. So if we still have a large amount of our thyroid in place, then we really can't use that test as a good barometer as if there's any recurrence or not, because that's going to be high because there's still residual thyroid tissue there. So having the entire thyroid removed, it really helps us be able to, number one, make sure that we've removed all the cancer and any potential other sites of cancer in the thyroid. Number two, it helps us then be able to treat the patient afterwards to make sure all the thyroid cancer is gone and all the thyroid tissue is gone. And third, it gives us the best way to follow the patient so that way we can identify those times when a patient may have a recurrence and find it early.
How long does the surgery last?
Surgery is roughly about 2 to 3 hours.
And then do they go home the same day?
Most of my patients will stay overnight, and then they'll have a small plastic tube coming out as a drain, and that drain's removed the next day, and the patients are sent home eating a regular diet the next day.
Okay. And is it possible for that cancer to have spread to something else?
So we're always concerned about the risk of spread of the cancer to the lymph nodes in the what we call lateral neck or the outer parts of the neck on both sides. And this constitutes a more advanced disease. And so in those patients, we would perform an ultrasound before the operation to make sure that there's no suspicious lymph nodes in that area. If there are, then we would do another fine needle aspiration of those lymph nodes in that outer neck area. Should they also show cancer, then at the same time that we would be talking about removing the thyroid, we would also remove the lymph nodes in that outer neck area.
You said you can tell by the ultrasound if they're suspicious for cancer. What would they look like
On the ultrasound, they'd be a little firmer and they wouldn't compress as easily. They may have some irregularity to them, and they would also be larger than the other lymph nodes.
Okay, I want to be clear on the types of thyroid cancers there are. The papillary, which you've mentioned, the follicular thyroid cancer. I mean, how are they different? And these are the ones that if you had to choose, right, we would choose.
the papillary.
One of those.
Yeah. Thyroid cancer comes in a couple of different flavors. There's the differentiated form of thyroid cancer, which includes the papillary cancer, follicular cancer, and Hürthle cell cancers. These tend to have the best prognosis overall, as we were indicating. When we think of cancer, we think of cancer usually in a five-year survival barometer. And in this particular type of cancer, we think of it in a 10-year barometer. And what's great is that these are over 90 to 95% survival in this 10-year format.
What are the takeaways today, would you say, for people who are interested in knowing more about thyroid cancer?
I think number one is to examine yourself on a regular basis, just as someone does a self-breast examination once a month, that on a regular basis you examine your neck, and you're just examining for new lumps and bumps and things of that nature. And if you find something, that you alert your doctor, so that way appropriate testing can start. And that usually, again, just includes an ultrasound, so a non-invasive test to be able to help best characterize this nodule and see if there's something really there and something that needs a biopsy or some further investigation. Again, we shouldn't be scared of this because the survival is fantastic for most patients. And so we want to be one of those most patients so that we have the best survival too.
I didn't ask, but the follow-up to surgery, is chemotherapy needed after that?
So usually not. Most patients will get surgery, and then if there is some higher risk for recurrence, they'll get radioactive iodine as their way to be able to try to kill off any other potential cancer cells.
Okay.
Then the patients go through a very rigorous surveillance program with their endocrinologist and someone like myself to help make sure that this doesn't come back. And that's usually mainly ultrasounds and some blood work to make sure that we're not seeing any characteristics of any recurrent lesion in that bed or any lymph node enlargement.
Yeah, where would it come back if it came back, if the gland is removed?
Most commonly would be either a lymph node right next to where the gland was, or out in the outer portion of our neck, in those what we call lateral lymph nodes.
Do you have many patients who you have treated in the past come back with another type of cancer?
Usually about 5 to 10% may come back with additional disease that shows up afterwards. So not many. Most patients do not have any recurrence, and most patients do extremely well.
And are their family members or their children at risk? Is it an inherited condition?
So thyroid cancer is not usually a familial process unless it's part of the multiple endocrine neoplasia syndrome, so the patients with medullary thyroid cancer. Other patients would be ones that have received radiation to the head and neck area, or that may have some other cancers associated with their thyroid cancer, like familial adenomatous polyposis or Cowden syndrome.
Okay. The average patient is 51 years old getting a thyroid cancer diagnosis. Is that about what you're seeing coming into your office too, around 51?
I would say it's a bit younger. You know, I think the youngest patient I had was about maybe 29. What we find is that it's the younger women that have the highest risk for these nodules, as well as the risk, higher risk for more advanced disease.
When patients come to you because they have a diagnosis of thyroid cancer, what's going through their mind, would you say? Do they have any misconceptions about the disease?
Most patients, once they hear the word cancer, kind of tend to shut down and think the world's coming to an end. Yeah. That's an expected response, unfortunately. Thankfully, with this diagnosis, we don't see that. With this diagnosis, I try to be very frank with patients and explain to them that even with lymph node positive disease, if they should have that we still expect them to have a great survival. So we have great opportunity as surgeons to remove cancer completely, as well as treat any microscopic disease with the radioactive iodine. And we find together we're able to tackle most patients.
Excellent. Thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, Deborah.
We've been talking with surgical oncologist Dr. Vinay Gupta at MedStar Franklin Square Medical Center in Baltimore. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us here on Doc Talk. For more information on thyroid cancer and treatment options, go to medstarcancer.org. Or for a consultation with a specialist, call 443-777-7911.